Sorry to bear less than stellar news, but the faculty committee has decided against forwarding your application to the next level of the Donaldson program.
There isn't anyone available from our admissions office to take part in the interview at this time.
I prefer not to go on the record, actually. No.
Okay, that's okay.
Yeah. Rejected! Yeah, you just got rejected! R-E-J-E-C-T-E-D, rejected!
Hello, I'm Dominique Amit with the audio workshop at the University of King's College in Halifax.
And I'm Abigail Trevino. Today we're talking about rejection. As budding journalists, we face rejection all the time. It's just par for the course when your degree is based on sticking a microphone or camera in someone's face and asking for their take on the record. We even got rejected while working on this podcast.
Rejection is one of the most universal human experiences. Whether you've been turned down for a job you wanted or you were turned down by the person you had a crush on, we all know that mix of anger, disappointment, and sadness known as rejection. Dr. Jennifer Stamp is sort of a rejection expert. Not because she gets turned down all the time, mind you. She's a psychologist who teaches and conducts research at Dalhousie University. She studies the effects of chronic stress on the brain.
The effects that rejection would have on the brain are the same as any other type of emotional pain, and that they activate a lot of the same brain areas that are involved in physical pain. But the other kind of deeper areas that are involved in processing what that means are virtually identical between physical pain and emotional pain. And social rejection is a really significant negative experience for social species like humans.
Usually I keep a script going on my left-hand monitor here.
Ed Bryson writes comic books. He works for Marvel Comics, creating content for Ghost Rider. But it took a lot of rejection to get there.
How did you become a comic book writer?
So for, 16 years, I self-published probably about, about 50 to 100 mini comics that I would write and draw just in my room or in my apartment when I moved out. And then, 2010 was where I had that sort of realization that I hate drawing. Started focusing on the writing. Up until then, I'd been trying to get in with publishers with no luck. And then 2010, I started writing, and I think 2012 is when I had my first published work, like I picked up by a publisher. And then since then, it's been a lot of setbacks.
So you talked about trying to get in with a lot of publishers prior to 2010. How many times did you get rejected?
I have lost track. So I took out a loan to self-publish a comic in 94. There was, I think, 8 comic book distributors back then, and I think 6 of them outright rejected our book and just would not carry the book because they thought it looked too amateurish, which at the time, we were about 18, really angry about that, but in retrospect, it was a pretty amateur effort. I would say I've been rejected by every publisher at least 4 times. So yeah, that was between 1994 till 2010, I would say at least, 40 rejections, 50 rejections.
What was your most memorable or most painful rejection letter?
I think this isn't so much a letter as it was like sort of an experience. And that was to go back to the first thing with Marvel. Marvel was always kind of like the end goal for me. And I was hired to do those 2 issues in 2013. And I went to New York Comic Con. I had a table there, was exhibiting, and that was just as issues were about to come out. But I was excited because I was there, that's where Marvel's based out of. And I was excited to be there just as my first issue was about to come out. But I think the bigger thing that felt like sort of a kick in the gut was that Marvel has a big party every year, and it's like an invite-only party. And everyone I knew was going to it. But I never ended up getting an invite to go to this party. So I was like, here it was, thinking like, I finally made it. And then here was this very real reminder that I still wasn't literally and figuratively invited to the party.
What kept you going?
Stubbornness. So I had a job that could sustain me, which I think sort of helped keep my sanity. But during that time, I think I quit comics at least 4 or 5 times. There was like just straight up rejections for the longest time. And then I think the first book that I published, I pitched to Image Comics in 2006, where I wasn't drawing, it was just me as a writer. I got a rejection letter, and I was used to just the cold rejection letters, but this time it was a personalized rejection letter from the publisher, who was Eric Larson back then, that you know, was a couple pages long, and it said, you know, like, I've sat on this pitch for about 2 or 3 days, and you know, I could go either way on it. I could publish it. It's right there. It's right on the line. It's like, but I feel like this is the book that you pitched me before the one that will be the one that gets through. And so I put together another pitch right away, you know, with a different artist. We pitched it, and he sent me an email. He's like, this is great. I'm going away to a comic convention this weekend. Let's talk when you get back next weekend. At that comic convention, it was announced that he was stepping down as publisher. Somebody else was coming in. And so for 8 months, I was kind of in limbo. And then the new publisher rejected the pitch that this first one had seemed to be interested in.
After facing all of that rejection, what was it like finally getting hired by Marvel?
So Marvel first hired me in 2013. I did 2 issues. Then I didn't get any more work from them until 2015, where I got 1 issue. That same year, I actually got 4 issues through DC, but then sort of every lead after that had dried up, and sort of money was kind of becoming an issue, and I was literally in the process of applying for part-time work when Marvel called me up in late 2016 to offer me a series, which was Bullseye, which he's a bad guy, Daredevil villain, but like I was legitimately on the computer about to hit send on a resume to a part-time position at a local college when the phone call came. The phone call stopped me from hitting send. It was just such a beautiful moment.
Being turned down for a job can really throw a wrench in your plans, but being turned down by someone you like can be even harder to face. In 2014, after 18 years of living abroad, 20-year-old Isaac Kane moved back to Halifax. He was looking for a community, so he joined his local church. While there, he made a friend that turned into a crush. After agonizing for a year, he asked her out.
And she was like my best friend. We were pretty close. And I'm not very good at that kind of stuff, so I wasn't sure if she was into me or not. So I kind of talked to a few people, and they're like, yeah, you might as well just ask her. So I did. I asked her out in like 2017. I think it was like the summer of 2017. And she said, well, she essentially said no. She said, like, she'd think about it, but that she wasn't really feeling it. And then a few weeks later, she gave me kind of like a small list of reasons why she couldn't say yes, which was really fair and really, it was done really well. Like, she was very compassionate about it. She wasn't, like, mean. And so that was a little rough, right? But I think I dealt with that fairly maturely. And then a few weeks after that, I think it was, she started dating like this guy, right, who I was pretty close with too. But he was also someone who, I guess I would always compare myself to him like negatively, right? So it was something that was kind of hard for me to be like, well, this was someone who I was into and she wasn't into me, and that was fair. But then she was into this other guy who I would always like feel insecure about. So that was pretty rough. So I stopped going to church for like a couple months, right? Just because they were both in the church and I didn't really, it kind of hurt to see them together, right? So I stopped going to church for a few months, and then I went back for like a week or so. And I was okay seeing them together, but I also realized like I liked myself more when I wasn't in the church. So then I just quit entirely, and I haven't really been back, which is great. Like, I think it was a good thing that happened in the long run. But it was really hard at the time, right? Because it wasn't just like I left her. Like, it's not like I didn't have her anymore as a friend. It was like I didn't have anyone else. You know, like there weren't very many people to talk to. The only people that I really still talked to was like her sister, which, you know, was kind of tough, you know, because she was dating my brother at the time, and you know, I was really close with her parents too, but like that's just, it was difficult, right? I was really close to all her family and to her church, and so then having to leave that behind, that was really difficult. I didn't have much community after that. It's not the end, it's not the end.
Remember Dr. Jennifer Stamp, who studies rejection? She says that isolation makes social rejection even worse.
So if, you know, if with being rejected or ostracized or left out in some way, not only is that experience in and of itself negative for us, but it also may prevent us from getting some of the coping that we need, because one of the most beneficial coping strategies for humans during times of trial or stress or threat or any kind of negative experiences is seeking out others. And if your stressor is rejection, then you automatically don't have that.
Even if you're not isolated and you have friends, rejection still stings. But what's it like being on the other side of the equation, doing the rejecting? Lance Cansdale is the head coach of Dalhousie University's swim team. He's had to make plenty of tough calls, sidelining athletes and their dreams.
We're limited to 18 men and 18 women, and that's all that can travel, that's all that can compete. So we do have to often make those cut downs. There are those that think they're good enough to make it, and my eye and experience tells me that they're not. And those can be a little bit difficult because you try not to have hard feelings, but ultimately you're having to make a decision that affects 17 other athletes. It's a little bit different than a lot of other sports because we're easy to measure. We're measured by seconds, tenths and hundredths of seconds. So you can see the standards that they have and where when they swam their fastest. And it's easy to quantify. That's not the whole story, but that's a big piece of it. It's never easy to tell somebody they're not going to make the team when that's been their heart and their desire. And I don't care how many times I've been on the end of that. The reality is it's not. And each time you do it, especially when it comes down to you're sitting across a desk from each other trying to discuss that, it's different every single time.
Coach Cansdale is no stranger to rejection himself. He narrowly missed the cut for the 1980 Canadian Olympic swimming team.
I was a top five athlete at one point in my event, but they only took two or one, depending on the time standards. So, and I knew everyone ahead of me. So it's tough, but you know what? It's your reality. Well, you know, as soon as you touch the wall, you're either first or second, or you're not.
But at the end of the day, it's about choosing the 36 most competitive swimmers to create a winning team.
It's like any competitive sport. The spots are unique, coveted, and important for anybody. And everybody has to have those opportunities. You don't sew something up for 5 years just because you happen to make it the first year.
Rejection isn't optional. Anyone who's ever applied for a job or an internship has gotten that dreaded email or phone call beginning with, "We regret to inform you." And chances are you've been turned down in your personal life too. But Dr. Stamp says there are ways to get through it.
Better social support systems. Right off the bat, you're going to be better able to deal with rejection, right? Because you're being able to compensate for that really basic psychological need of being included. You can get that elsewhere. So I would say, and generally, across the board, people who have strong social support generally do better health-wise, life-wise, you know, mental health-wise, and general health and well-being. So that, I think, is something that is a major difference in dealing with rejection, is if you do have a strong social support network, then that the impact is necessarily going to be less.
Honestly, I'm glad we chose rejection as our topic. I definitely learned a lot. I'm in the process of waiting for a couple of law schools to get back to me, and I feel like I'm a lot more prepared to handle potentially not getting into my top choice.
I learned a lot, too. It makes all the difference having a room full of supportive colleagues in this audio workshop cheering us on from behind the scenes. We've faced a decent amount of rejection making this podcast, and it's made all the difference to be able to vent. For The Signal, I'm Abby Trevino.
And I'm Dominique Gamet. Don't let rejection get you down.